Good morning, and welcome back to the Daily AI Executive. It's Tuesday, July 21st, and Jordan, we've got a genuinely interesting theme running through today's briefing. Everyone's suddenly obsessed with how you actually measure AI value, not just how much AI costs.
Right, and it's coming from three completely different directions, too. A vendor, a regulator, and a content company. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the vendor angle, because it's the one that'll actually change how finance teams operate. OpenAI CFO, Sarah Friar, published a framework this week basically arguing that cost per token, the metric everyone's used for 2 years, is the wrong way to budget for AI.
Wait, the company that sells the tokens is telling everyone to stop counting tokens?
Exactly. And that's the tension we're sitting with. Her argument is that the real question is whether the value of the work AI completes grows faster than the cost of producing it. So instead of price per million tokens, she's proposing four questions. How many tasks did AI actually help complete? What does each successful task really cost once you include human review and retries and rework? Can you depend on the result? And is the value per dollar improving over time?
Okay, that actually sounds like a reasonable framework. What's the catch?
The catch is, who gets to define successful task? Axios pointed out the obvious conflict. OpenAI's models are among the most expensive on the market, so of course they want you judging them on outcomes rather than sticker price. Their argument is that the priciest, most capable models end up cheapest once you factor in fewer retries and rework.
Which might even be true. But you don't want to just adopt their definition of success wholesale.
Right. That's the finance implication here. FP&A teams need their own unit of account. Cost per completed workflow, independently defined, not a vendor-supplied scorecard. Use the framework as a template, not gospel.
So what does that look like in practice? Is this a spreadsheet change or a contract change?
Both, eventually. Procurement conversations shift from what's your API rate card to what's the fully loaded cost per completed workflow, including rework. And the piece says expect outcome-based pricing to become the default contract structure within 18 to 24 months, which means a lot of seat-based and token-based agreements are going to get renegotiated.
That's a big shift for media and content businesses too, right? Cost per finished VFX shot, cost per localized episode?
Exactly the kind of unit economics content finance teams should be building now, before the vendor conversation happens, not during it.
Okay, let's move to the regulatory story, because this one feels like it has teeth already.
This is the EU ordering Google to open up Android and search data to rival AI assistants. Two binding Digital Markets Act decisions. Right now, on Android, competitors' AI assistants only get restricted access to core OS functionality, while Google's own assistant has full access. Brussels says that's not a level playing field.
So what actually changes for a user?
You'll be able to activate a third-party assistant with a voice command, similar to Hey Google, and let it perform actions inside other apps on your behalf. Book a taxi, suggest replies in a chat app, that kind of thing. Search data sharing kicks in January 2027. Android changes need to land by mid-2027.
So this is basically forcing interoperability at the exact layer where Google's had a structural advantage.
Right, and the who wins, who loses here is pretty clean. Smaller AI assistant challengers finally get real distribution in Europe. Google's default placement advantage narrows, and this sets precedent. This could easily reach other gatekeepers, Apple included.
What's the commercial read for a media or advertising business sitting on top of all this?
If your discovery or ad strategy assumes one dominant assistant or search channel, you need contingency modeling now for a more fragmented, multi-assistant landscape starting in 2027. GEO, Generative Engine Optimization, becomes a real budget line, not a side project.
Multi-year appeals process aside, the direction of travel is set.
That's Gartner's read too, effectively. Mandated interoperability is now established policy in the EU's largest digital market. High confidence on that one.
All right, third story. This is the one that surprised me a little.
A major streaming platform just told shareholders that generative AI touched around 300 titles in production this year.
Yeah, and the key detail is where this showed up, in a shareholder letter, not a press release. That's a signal. This isn't a pilot anymore. It's material enough to be board visible and disclosure worthy. 300 titles is a lot. What are they actually using it for? Everything from concept and pre-visualization through to post-production. They specifically called out enhanced crowd sizes and battle sequences in complex shots. And the company said plainly, in some cases, productions would have had to cut key shots entirely without generative AI.
So this is a real cost lever, not just a novelty.
That's exactly the framing. This came alongside $12.5 billion in quarterly revenue, up 13% year over year. And they're on track to roughly double ad revenue to about $3 billion this year. AI-assisted production is shifting from an R&D line to a recurring cost of goods reduction lever that finance teams should be forecasting title by title.
But there's a rights and consent angle here too, surely.
Big one. Productions and vendors that can't demonstrate provenance and consent for AI-generated assets are exposed, legally, with unions, reputationally. The piece